Hey everybody, Chris Aiken from the CMS Podcast Network, and if you are a person that likes to watch our videos, whether it's Classic Metal Show, Talk To Me, Skull Sessions, or Aftershocks, do not do it on YouTube. Do you hear me? Do not do it on YouTube. Go to fupal.com, FVIEWPAL.com. Hey everybody, it is Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show, and before we get to this next episode, just wanted to remind you one more time, go over and visit the CMS Podcast Network. CMSPN.com is the web address. You get four great shows on one great site. You get us, of course, you get Aftershocks, you get Talk To Me, and you get the Shockwave Skull Sessions with Bob Now Bandian. Make sure you get over there. You can watch the episodes. You can listen to the episodes. You can subscribe so it's delivered to your phone and you never have to touch it again. So again, get over there, CMSPN.com, CMSPN.com. And if you didn't hear me the first two times, CMSPN.com. All right, here's the episode you actually came to see. It is your Classic Metal Show right here on the classicmetalshow.com, and it's going to keep right on playing. Fuck, there it goes. That, of course, was Megadeth from the 13 record. That was The Wrecker, which I am tonight. It is me, Chris Aiken. I am here to wreck every bit of legacy that the fucking CMS has built up over the past 51 weeks, but I've done it. I'm going to do it with some help from my friends, as the Beatles once told us. First, I'll bring in Mr. John Drake. John, what's up, brother?
What's up, man? Ah-hoo! That's a good follow-up, man. Nice work on that.
I made it up on the fly. You know that.
I know. Was it Werewolves in London that almost came up? Is that what that was?
That was Kid Rock, of course.
Okay.
It was Kid Rock all summer long, of course. You know, another one that's going to help us wreck this fucker tonight, Mr. Drew 48.
Hand jobs,
my friend. Fuck you, pal.
Hail, trim.
From all accounts, it looks like we are going to be fucking silly tonight. Bob Now Bandian is supposed to jump in with us at some point tonight. James Edwards is going to be jumping in with us to talk about his new movie, and I'm going to be talking to him specifically about who's the sicker fuck, him or you, Drew, because that Christian movie was just fucking brutal.
Definitely sticks with you.
It certainly does, man. But we are going to definitely have some fun here tonight. Neely, as was announced last week, he's off with his girlfriend for a weekend in New Mexico. He's hiking right now with Don somewhere in the hills. Maybe he's looking for George Lynch. I don't know, but
a peyote trip.
I heard they got each other matching pink hiking boots and they're up in the mountains just hiking away. So
there, as they should,
exactly. But we're just going to kind of wing it tonight. It is, I don't know. Are you guys drinking or are you not drinking?
I got water and I got cigarettes. That's about it.
John?
Later. Well, I may or may not have some Rumpelman, some Johnny Walker Red, and 18 beers in the fridge.
Nice.
I got some Diet Coke, so I'm living on the edge over here.
You're going to be caffeinated as fuck, bro.
I'm starting with the hand job mug full of coffee.
That's amazing.
There you go.
But I have the... At long last, my two-month-old bottle of Grey Goose is going to get broke tonight, and I've got it in the freezer just waiting for me to get a little bit more up before I start taking the downers, so.
That's what she said.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I figure, you know, I'm going to keep it in check for the first couple hours, and then, you know, then I can start going, because if I started now, I haven't really had much to eat. It would get kind of ugly real fast.
Yeah, because we've never done that before, right, John? Drew, I got to tell you, and we'll get into whatever we get into here in a minute, but John and I, one of the first times that we did the show together, just me and him, I'm assuming Neely was at a docking show because where else would he be? But for whatever reason, he wasn't here. And so we decided we would do the show together. So we decided we needed to get together 3 hours early to prep, to be ready, right? And by prep, I mean drinking our faces off for 3 hours before the start of the show.
Oh, God.
And then we drank for 6 more hours during the show. And am I wrong in thinking another 2 hours after the show, John?
You are not wrong, but it was more like three because it was the sun was up when I left your place.
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, it was the first time that I had done a full show. And so I'm thinking, okay, Aiken and I have hung out 10, 12 hours at a time and been fine. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't take into account having a microphone in front of me and having to sound somewhat coherent and not saying some of the most vulgar shit imaginable. Right? That was not good. That was not good. Hey.
Look, there's another one.
Oh, God damn. Look at this. People can actually smell the alcohol coming through your breath. Even though I'm 3,000 miles away. Jesus Christ.
You're a little early, Bob.
What's up, John Drake?
What's up, Bob Nalbandian? How are you, man?
Good. And Drew, how are you, man?
Good. How you doing, man?
Good. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie, you sick fuck.
I'm sure
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, man. Look, yeah, that's a.
He's the only one drinking. Bob is Bob's the old man in the room, and he's the only one drinking. Jesus
Christ. Oh, well, I'm sure that ain't going to last for long.
No, that is true, because I fully plan.
I see your liquor cabinet in the back of you.
Oh, yeah.
Although it's probably just a green screen, so you can act like you're some kind of fucking alcoholic when we all know that you're some kind of a schoolboy fucking church-going boy.
Right. Were you
standing to be a priest or some shit at one point there, Chris?
I actually have a degree in theological studies.
Well, there you go.
As anybody would expect from me with my uber clean Jesus is my savior mentality that I spew.
Yes. Well, very cool. You want me to put in headphones? Are you getting a little bit of an echo from me?
Not on this side. I don't hear it.
Sounds good to me, man.
Is it all right?
Yep, okay. All good.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, you sound fine, man. Well, nice. Well, we've got the four of us here. And you know what? I'm going to start off with Bob since he's here right away. Because I actually have, I don't know that it's a bone to pick with you, Bob, or maybe it's just a bone to pick with myself, but you're involved with it. So last night I was rewatching The Bay Area Godfathers, which is Bob's documentary. It's on Amazon Prime. And I'm in it. And you would think that because I'm in it, I would be like all celebratory and be like, yeah, fuck yeah, cool, right? So the first time I watched it, I was exactly that way, to be honest. I just saw myself and was like, yeah, there I am on the screen, baby. But last night I got to watch it a little more critically. And I'm ready to kill you, Bob, for this clip that you put of me saying absolutely fucking nothing. I'm going to pull it up. Let me bring it onto the screen here. It's only like 30 seconds. I want everybody to listen and make sure it's not just me, but I literally don't think, I think this is literally just words falling out of my face. And none of it makes any sense at all. I don't know what's going on here. Let's see. Can we do this?
Oh, there's Peter Marino.
All right. So let me hit the play here. Figure out how to do this.
I do expect royalties from this, from you playing.
You almost sure, a few bucks now.
I'm sure DLive will be quick to throw you that nickel, my friend. All right. Here we go. Listen to what I have to say.
All right. And the Chicago guys were like meat eaters. They were like,
is that you, Chris? You look different.
Thinner.
You know, it was like totally different.
Right after this guy. Hold on.
If you look at the different scenes that there are, there with Florida having the death metal scene and, you know, San Francisco being considered the thrash metal scene and LA being considered the hair metal scene and, you know, with all these different things that are going on, it's kind of a like-minded mentality, you know? And I think that's why certain scenes thrive, because all the bands are doing certain things the same.
The Bay Area metal scene is...
I thought that was a good quote, actually.
Very provocative. And it's
pretty true, I think. I mean, you had the Florida, the death metal scene, Seattle, the grunge scene, you know, LA. It is kind of goes by scenes. You don't like that clip?
No.
Then why'd you say it?
Because I'm an idiot. Because that was probably 10 beers into the shoot, to be honest.
I thought it made pretty good sense, and it flowed with the previous quotes, because we were talking about how the San Francisco scene was kind of created by its own scene and how it differed from, you know, LA and everything else. So it actually
flowed. It makes sense good. To you because you're the only one drinking.
All right, we're drawn. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think it needs context. Like, Chris, I kind of get what you're saying, because in a vacuum, it kind of looks like, well, they're kind of similar because they're bands and they play music and they have guitars. Like, I get what you're saying, but I think with context, I think it sounds like you were making a cogent point.
Well, if you hear the previous quotes, it does tie in a lot better. It kind of gives it. You know, you can't and that was kind of a long quote. Most quotes are like about 20 seconds long, so we kind of try to tie it in so it all kind of blends into one story. But
go ahead, Drew. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought it worked great. I know the pain of making documentaries and just to having to cut it together and make it make the point you want to make.
I mean, you were right. It's not like you weren't off that much.
I heard me saying was the bands, they did a thing, and that thing was the thing because the thing was thingy and that thing was the thing.
It's great filler. It's great filler. Yeah. Keyboard's great.
That sounds just like you. That sounds like you're on the classic metal show. Talking about your thing all the time.
Exactly.
The cool thing is every band had a drummer. And then they had a guy that sang into the microphone.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, when they had a bass player, that makes a scene.
We all had noses and eyes and faces. Spoke English.
That's all more coherent than what I heard. All I heard was, they were there. And because they were there. And therefore, they were there.
It was like a Miss USA pageant answer.
See, what I got out of it is Metallica came. And they started this kind of thrash metal thing there. And then everyone kind of had this like, wow, look at what these guys are, going beyond, you know, what most thrash and new wave of metal, or it wasn't thrash, and most new wave of British heavy metal bands or whatever, they're doing this new thing. Let's kind of do that. And that's where the like-minded mentality kind of came in. Because if you look at it, you know, even Exodus, they were kind of a cover band. They had a few songs. You know, Testament was a legacy. They weren't doing, none of these bands were doing that kind of music until, Metallica came, and it did kind of become this like-minded mentality, like, hey, these guys could do this. Let's get faster. Let's play faster. Let's play heavier. Let's play more riffs like these guys do, but make it different. And that was kind of what I got out of it.
But yeah.
Maybe I'm looking too much in. Maybe I'm making you smarter than you actually are.
There's probably some of that. I don't know. Like anything else, I think we're always the most critical of our own shit, no matter what it is. You know, I'm sure, and Drew, you could probably speak on this the best because you've done, I think, the most movie stuff of the four of us here. You know, do you look at your own stuff and just hate it? Do you look at it and go, oh,
absolutely.
God, why did I?
Oh, my God. Yeah. When I did the Bang Tango movie, I fucking hated that band so much while I was making that movie. That's just because I had to look at them every single day for like 4 years straight. And
where can I find that movie, by the way?
Oh, I ended up having to put it out for free on YouTube, so you can find it on YouTube.
I got to check that out. I've heard a lot.
I think you'll get a kick out of it for sure. And Dwellers, I've been finishing that up, and I'm one of the main characters in it, so I fucking hate myself now because I got to look at myself every day for the past 2 years. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you were great in Krista. I got to say.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you.
I know we're not getting into the movie yet, but this is really bugging me ever since I saw the movie, and you got to answer this for me because I'm trying to figure it out. At the end, toward the end of the movie, when they catch the guy and he's giving his interviews to the police, and I don't know if it's like all real or if it's not, but there's a point where they ask about you and they say, we don't know that this guy ever existed. We tried looking for him. So was he thinking all that stuff up about you being his best friend there, or did you just vanish? I don't quite get that toward the end.
I think that actually took shape on set because at the beginning of the movie, there's this one big shot of the workplace where you can see everybody working. And I was like taking a picture of something. I forgot to be in that shot. And so, we're like, hey, you know, maybe we can make it to where like my character may or may not exist you know, it, or just actually just exists inside the main character's head as like his wild side, you know?
Right.
And, but if you rewatch it again, like anybody who interacts with me, my character doesn't really interact with me. So, like his boss and all that and everything. So you'll catch like itty bitty things like that, especially that one first shot where you see everybody, at that, that office, like, you see, like in the back where I would be sitting, I'm not there. And so it kind of like played out through that, like by the end of it. So I think he ended up adding that scene where the cop is like, "Hey, there's no record of this Nick Perkins, character, nothing like that." So it kind of worked out pretty cool. Like, I think that's how it went. I'm not sure if it was like intentional like that from the beginning, but yeah. So it came out pretty cool like that. So
it did make sense. It kind of bummed me out because it's like, God, Nick was the perfect character, and it played great, but now he was just this imaginary guy. I'm thinking, okay. But
you can look at it either way, I guess. You can look at it either way, but I guess it more so leans toward Nick being kind of like the Steven, the main character, is like wild side. And you'll see later the guy that plays Steven, who also wrote and directed Krista, looks nothing like he did in the movie. He actually shaved his head and grew out a mustache and everything. And and so when he's actually in Dwellers too. He plays himself in Dwellers. And once you see him, you're gonna be like, "That's not the same guy." But then he'll start talking, and he sounds identical to Dante from Clerks, so there's no mistaking.
Well, Drew, how involved were you in Krista? Were you like a co-producer, or did you help write it, or is it James's baby and you were just an actor, or what? Yeah. What was your involvement?
Yeah, that was James's baby, and I was just an actor. Yeah, that's my first time acting. I was a fan of James from this movie he did in the '90s called Bloodletting. Okay. And dude, just terrific. And then I just kind of followed him on Facebook and saw he was doing this movie called Her Name is Krista. And he just put out a casting call, and I got a hold of him. It turned out he's a Bang Tango fan, and he saw the movie and all that. And I was like, "Oh, this could work out well." And and then I auditioned for Nick and ended up getting the part at Chuck Mosley's house. James met me up at Chuck Mosley's house while I was there rehearsing, and to tell me I got the part and everything. So that was kind of cool. And
you were in Chuck's band for a while, right?
I was, yeah. I love Chuck very much. He was such a good dude, and I really miss him a lot.
Yeah. Chuck was an interesting character, to say the least. Every time you ran into Chuck, it was like meeting a different person. Yeah. At least for me, I would see Chuck back when Chuck had this band called Vandals of Illiteracy. That was after Faith No More, way after Faith No More. And Chuck lived out here. He lived in the area, and we would run into Chuck. We did a show with Chuck that was really odd, but we would run into Chuck, or Chuck would come down to do the radio show every so often when I was doing commercial radio on WMMS. And every single time he would come down, it was like a different dude. One time he would come down, he's punk rock guy. The next time he would come down, he's dressed like Mr. T. The next time he comes down, he's in a suit. It was like, he was like the oddest guy. But then when you'd start talking to him, this dude had stories for days and days and days. I mean, that's one thing that guy could do better than just about anybody I've ever met was tell a story. He was.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites is when he was taking a piss next to Jack Nicholson at the Grammys.
Tell it.
I think he went with Roddy. Okay. This is actually after Chuck was in Faith No More. This is after he left. And so Roddy invited him to the Grammys. And I guess Mike Patton was there too. So it was just like a strange situation, but they all got along. And Chuck goes to go take a piss. And he looks over and he sees Jack Nicholson. And Jack Nicholson, I guess, started mumbling about some actress broads, as he put it, and then farted as he was taking a piss, and just walked out. He's made a couple like really, really nasty comments about some girls, and then farted and then took off. But of course, the way Chuck tells it, it's like, yes, you know Chuck's voice and his demeanor, it's fucking hysterical.
Yep, he was a character, man, to say the least. That is for sure, man.
Oh, yeah. True like street artist guy, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I got to know him after he because obviously he did a lot of drug issues, and I got to know him right when he got finished with that before the final relapse, you know. And but the Chuck I got to experience, I guess, was a very rare Chuck, you know, and he was just happy. He was just fun. He was just loving life. We had so much fun, man. And I got a lot of, you know what's fucked up? I only knew Chuck for 6 months, but got close to the guy, and just blows my mind how much of an impact he had on me as a human being, you know, just knowing somebody for 6 months. But I got a lot of funny Chuck stories for sure. And I miss him a lot. He was a good dude.
Yeah, he was. Now you know my friend Doug too, don't you?
Doug Esper? Oh yeah, he's in Dwellers. He's one of the main dudes in Dwellers.
Oh, is he? Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's me, Doug, and James. We're the film crew in the movie. Within the movie. And I love Doug. Doug used to one of the big jokes with the Chuck band was Doug does a spot on impersonation of the Batman villain Bane. And so he just goes around talking and speaking like this. And then so it got to the point where Chuck started doing it. But of course, it sounded nothing like Bane. And so you're just starting, you know, he sounded like a pirate. This one time, for sound check, we were in, I think it was in Iowa or something like that. And the weather was terrible. And like we were like near Dubuque. And I guess there was like tornadoes going on and all that. And so Doug, during sound check, he hops on the microphone. There's people there. And he's like, "Behold my reckoning. I have sent a tornado to Dubuque." And then nobody laughed because people there were from Dubuque and their homes were getting destroyed in that very moment.
That's funny, man. Oh, my God. Yeah, Doug, I think I've told you this story off the air. I don't think I've ever told it on the air, though. Doug's claim to fame here in Cleveland was for a minute. And, John, I'll be interested to see if you even remember this.
Okay.
Doug hosted was the main host and main guy at what I think was the first and only Cleveland area brick and mortar internet radio station called clevelandhits.com.
Oh my god, is that a blast?
It was in like 2000 or 2000. It was way before internet radio was But the thing was, they had an actual building, and you would walk in the building. And you know, this is back when everybody was on fucking 56K modems. This was back when to listen to internet radio, you were going through the beep, boop, 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 you know.
You've got mail.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. It literally, I think it connected like through an AOL chat board thing, you know. But they had a studio, and Doug invited me to the studio a couple of times, and I went to this studio, and it was immaculate, the studio. And then, you know, so I would always try, and this is before even social media was anything. So, you know, I'd be trying to send email blasts out to all my friends saying, "Hey, I'm going to be on Cleveland Hits." And people were like, "What the fuck is that?" You know, you know, no one had any idea. And I don't think the station ever, and you could ask Doug on this to be sure, but I would bet that they never had more than 15 listeners ever at a time. It was just ahead of the curve. They certainly couldn't have done this. It was literally, they had $1 million worth of equipment and a 56K modem. And but it was the first one that, and to be honest, I've seen a couple. Bob, you obviously worked with T Radio, which was all internet. And
well, I mean, before then with Hard Radio, he was like the first. He started in 96. And I'll tell you, it's funny you talk about that, because around 2000, that was during the huge internet boom, and there was huge money being invested in internet radio was going to be the next big thing. CanAC.com started around then. And it's funny because they all used to work with Hard Radio, Long Paul and Tom Mastery, who had since passed on, and a few Nasty Neil. A lot of the jocks were there originally. And then they started CanAC.com, got involved with this guy, Rob, and some other money guys. They had a beautiful studio as well. In fact, they took over the old radio station building, which was huge in Long Beach, and they had an immaculate setup. And I think they were able to get above the 56 modem. It was a brand new, whatever was the next thing in line. But it was going to be, you know, like this huge thing. And there was tons of, and I'll tell you, I was sticking around with Hard Radio, and I, you know, was got had a percentage of them because I was there early on. And, you know, I still stuck with Tracy and still do stuff with him. But at that time, he was going to get a huge multi-million dollar investment coming in. He was talking to all sorts of people. And then that's when Napster came along and they were going to actually the music business, they were going to make, you know, because this is when Pandora and all these things before Spotify, right. But there were a lot of others that were doing on-demand radio where you could kind of on-demand and they were going to make that illegal. All the record labels were on board. Everyone was on board. And, you know, this was the whole thing we were talking about, how the music business failed and the computer companies, internet companies took over.
Mm-hmm.
They sold out. All the record labels, they sold in. They took stock in all these up-and-coming companies, whether it be, you know, YouTube, Pandora, you know, Spotify later. And that blew it open and where, you know, internet radio didn't mean anything. And then anyone, you know, a bunch of people had internet radio stations. But in the late 90s, I think hard radio started in 95 or 96, and up until like 2000, right around 2000, that was when it was going to be massive. They said that internet radio was going to take over,
right?
Sirius and all those things, because you'll be able to get in your car, blah blah blah, you know. And then it was wide open field. They just, you know, because the internet radio was going to be as it is radio. It's not on demand radio like Spotify or theirs, where you could program what you want to hear. It was just. And, you know, KNAC and hard radio was 24/7 metal, you know, just metal music. And they would do it kind of like a radio station, have personalities, you know, DJs and make it, you know, a kind of a cool character, you know. But anyway, all that went out the window right around, you know, when Spotify really came in. And Napster kind of opened up that door to
Apple.
And Apple, iTunes.
Well. Yeah. You could tell Tracy he could still blow me. I haven't forgotten. Fuck
him. I remember that. I was all of that.
Fuck him. I still remember him threatening to sue me, and he can suck my dick.
Was, he sent me those emails, and it was, I think you misread those totally wrong.
What, with me?
Yeah.
He told me that out. He was going to sue me.
I sent you the thread of the whole email because he keeps everything. He had the whole conversation, and there was nothing about him threatening to sue you.
Send me that, because if I'm wrong, I will apologize. But okay. But
I don't know. He goes, we got in a little bit. He goes, I never threatened to sue you.
I swear.
Here's all the emails. Here's the whole conversation. I believe he keeps track of all that shit.
I swear. That was back when I had my Mojo Crew email address. I have those. I have those emails as well, and right. I would swear to Christ, he said. Change your meta the situation so that you guys and the listeners understand was, and I'm going to get a little techie here for a minute, but websites have what are called meta tags, and meta tags are one of the things that Google looks for. And you know, when you do a search, and back in 2000, shut up, Dick. But
is that Nostradamus?
Back.
Yeah. Hey, is that a Barney Friedman shirt on? Stand up a second. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes,
oh,
it is.
Yeah, I applied. A
couple tours ago. I knew you were coming out, so I have to wear my old school Marty Friedman shirt.
All I see is the top now, but when you then I saw the Marty, it's like okay.
Yeah, it's the one with the the Ramones logo.
Yeah. Very cool.
I knew you were coming out, so I had to do you a solid there.
All right.
So, Chris, back to your boring tech shit.
All right.
Now, fuck his boring tech shit.
Bottom line was...
We're taking over this show. Fuck
yeah. Why with me? Hey, that's easy for me. I'll bounce out. You guys can talk amongst yourselves.
I'll say the next 5 hours, we do nothing but bag on Neely on his own fucking show.
And get hammered.
Over and talk shit about
it. Come on, Bob.
I'm sure John would love that.
Come hey. On, Bob. Neely doesn't like me already, remember? We've established that. So.
Oh, come on. Neely's got some balls. He's not going to cry about it, is he? Is he that sensitive? Or,
about what?
All right, let's go to some music, and then we can...
Since when have I ever ducked controversy? Jesus Christ, yeah. Are you kidding? You know, what are we saying here? That Neely does or does... I still stand by Neely doesn't hate John, but he doesn't respect John.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. He's got a problem with me. He just thinks I'm a fucking idiot. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, which, I mean, he's not so far from the truth, but
Look, when we had this, the aborted pig roast thing in September, whenever that was, August, September, John and Neely talked for hours.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest that we were all in the like Billy Morris's recording studio, and John, who never talks politics, and Neely were talking politics. And then John's wife was sitting on the couch with me talking about if she would or wouldn't blow guys when they pull their pants down and she saw a small cock. So if we were into this weird, it was two very different conversations going on in the same room.
Yes.
I heard about that. What was the deal when you and Neely walked into the bathroom together there and spent an hour and a half in their bathroom? What was going on there, John?
Yeah, John.
What kind of fake shit is this now, Vandy? What the hell? Are you still mad at me because I said that the one Iron or Armored Saint record was garbage? Are you still mad at me for that one?
No, we didn't even get to talk about that. I wasn't even on the. I couldn't even get on that that night. I was 4 hours to get on. That's what I was thinking this time. It's like I'm just going to be sitting there in the fucking green room stroking my cock waiting to get off. I have a porn hub on the other channel there just to kill some time.
Now, in my defense, on that episode, I kept being like, dude, you got to get an Albanian in. No, we're rolling. We'll get him in. I'm like, dude, he's waiting forever. You got to get an Albanian on. No, we're rolling.
Next segment. Next segment.
Hey, what about Albanian? I think he's like waiting there. Ah, no, we'll get him.
All right. Nobody is here telling the real story, though. The real story is John's wife, who was not on the air that night, was making me drinks. And the drinks were in these big...
Blame it on the alcohol.
It was definitely alcohol because she was making me like 80-20 screwdrivers. And they were 80% vodka, 20% orange juice. But they were big, like bigger than Solo cups. And I was downing them three an hour.
Yeah.
I was just power drinking. And by the time it got to you, I was... It's the only time in the history of the show I've ever been slurry. At the end of the night, we were talking about Slayer, and I'm like, yeah, and Jeff Hanneman said.
I caught it about an hour and a half before the show ended, and I was like, shit, I'm going to have to take the lead. Like, it's not even my show. So if you listen back to segments from that show, you'll hear him come, and that was so-and-so. Like, yeah, so that was so-and-so. And, you know, I think we wanted to get into this topic and kind of like, pulling him to the finish line. Like, so yeah, Bob and Drew, so just so you guys know, my wife does not drink booze. She's strictly a beer girl and pretty much just Miller Lite and McUltra at that. So if she has to mix a drink, you're fucked.
Yeah.
She has no idea that it's like a little bit of booze and a bunch of mixer. Like, she just pours and pours and goes, is this okay? Like, oh, and it's, dude, your liver is going to get punished if she's your mixologist, man.
And it isn't like,
the bartender for the next Inside Metal screening.
Oh, God. You'll never get that thing done, man. Like, everyone will be passed out puking.
At least that way people will like the film. Fucking great movie. Yeah.
See, Drew, that's what you were missing with the Bang Tango. You should have just had, you could have had Stephanie just be your bartender. You could have sold that thing to Paramount or something.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
That's the money making gig. She's gonna be a celebrity bartender for people who want to get as fucked up as fast as possible.
Well, and let's be honest, when it's Stephanie, it's not hard to get real fucked up because you're getting a little buzz. She's got those great tits, so you're looking at her tits.
I knew her tits were going to come up soon already.
She got great tits. Too, man. She got great fucking tits. There's no question about that. And so the more drunk you get, and she always wears like these rock t-shirts, so it's like stretching the bullets on the Guns N' Roses shirt or whatever. It's like, holy shit, look at those fucking cans. And the more alcohol I get going in me, you know, it's like, now I remember why she's my friend, because I wanted to fuck her really bad at one time.
What do you mean at one time?
Oh, I still do. I was going to say,
you make that clear on the phone many times.
Yeah, it's definitely the oddest relationship that I have in my life, because she's like my best friend in the world, and at the same time, I'm like, yeah, but I'd still fuck you. it's bizarre, but whatever. She's a queen.
Well, welcome to the Classic Metal Show, Drew.
Love it. This is great. More Stephanie tonight,
by the way.
What's that?
Where is Stephanie tonight, John?
She actually is back in Lima. She we had our family Christmas with her dad's side of the family today, and she's staying tonight because she's going to go watch the Browns with her dad tomorrow. And then she's hanging out with my stepdaughter on Monday. So she's kind of doing
the limelight here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hear that's the place to be.
Oh, it's a sprawling metropolis, all right, especially if you like COVID, you know, and not wearing a mask. If you hate masks, go to Lima. Yeah.
if you like oil tankers and tanks, that's what you do in Lima. You see where they manufacture tanks and process oil, and that's it.
Yeah, it's boring, but speaking of strong drinks, yeah. It's a great place to play band shows, man, because you're like, I'll take a Jack and Coke, and the thing comes out, and it's like, it looks like, you know, like iced tea, like watered down iced tea in the color, because it's just all Jack and like a little bit of Coke. Like, it's like, and they'll be like, yeah, that's $1.75. Like, son of a bitch.
Well, now we know where Stephanie got her training from.
Exactly.
Exactly. Probably. It's in her Lima DNA, man.
she was probably the bartender at Jay's for years, John, and that just taught her.
Yeah, right.
But I know, chat room, you don't know what Jay's is. Just shut up.
I was a bartender for many years prior to all the random shit I did. I actually lived at the bar I bartended at for a long time too. That's actually how I met Bang Tango, was through bartending. And then everything just kind of snowballed, and here I am.
So how can you don't drink, or do you drink, or what do you do?
No, I haven't drank in like 3 years now. It wasn't really like on purpose. It was like my body. When I was bartending, it was just like I was drinking like a case of beer a day. It was ridiculous, and I didn't have to pay for it. And right. I remember one time I got so drunk, people actually thought I was mentally challenged. And so at that point, I was like, I think I should probably calm down with this stuff. but yeah, I haven't drank in like 3 years now.
Wow. I don't think you're going to have to leave now, Drew. Jeez. No
time like the present, Drew.
Enjoy the show in the next couple hours. Everyone else exactly. Is sloshed, and Drew's going to have to take over as...
Yeah. 3 hours from now to be, and it's Drew back here on the Classic Metal Show.
Yeah. The Classic Metal Show.
Yeah, exactly. You've got three of the four of us that actually have hosted shows and know how to do it, and we're going to be the ones that are fucked. And then poor Drew's going to be like, welcome back to the Classic Metal Show.
I'll do an impersonation to everybody. Like, hey, this is Chris. What's going on? Welcome to that Classic Metal Show. And talk about my book. And, you know.
You mean this one, rock star hitman?
Oh, man. Oh, man. You're the one that bought it.
Oh, you see, look again. It says not for resale. You sent it to me.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's like two of a kind right there. You and Neely's got the other one.
David Ellison was selling autographed copies of it. So I go, wow, the book already came out. That was a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We started writing that. I think he had the idea about a year ago. And then... Right. Then I started writing it. Then we both wrote it. Okay. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. but it came together really quick. Like, he had a lot of cool ideas, and we just kind of fleshed out the characters. And I ended up getting done with it like collectively, probably like a week's worth of work. And so if there's any spelling, if there's anything you didn't like about it, just blame me. I think that was the plan me and Dave had. It was like, if anybody thinks parts of this book suck, we're just going to blame you, Drew. I'm like, yeah, I'm all for
it. Wait a minute. So you wrote this whole thing in a week?
Quite collectively. If you add up all the time I spent him and I would just kind of throw ideas around, and I would kind of put it in place. And he'd throw a couple chapter ideas at me and all that and everything. So I just kind of just put one word in front of the other, and collectively, probably with the time it's spent sitting down typing it all out, yeah, probably a week or less. Like my autobiography, I wrote that in 3 days.
You know what? Fuck you. Jesus Christ. Dude, the last book, the last one that I put out, and other things I should not say.
Oh, yeah. I got that around
you. I took, I think, 18 months to write it. And then it took John. John was my editor on it because he can actually spell and knows punctuation and shit. You know, how long did it take to edit it? 6 weeks or 6-8 weeks?
Yeah, it was like 6 to 8 weeks.
We spent a shit ton of time. We spent fucking 2 years on that. You're like, I shit this one out in 3 days. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I mean, but when it was all together, I formatted it too and all that junk and kind of just all the stuff, like, you know, somebody would normally pay somebody else to do. I was like, yeah, fuck that. I'll just figure out how to do it myself, and just had it all print ready, like at a PDF at the end of the day, and it just did the whole shebang. And then the Elvis was like, holy shit. And I was like, yeah, holy shit. And we kind of like self-edited, which is probably wasn't a good idea in hindsight, but I have a knack for being able to read stuff from like a different perspective, because, you know, like being a filmmaker, you got to watch stuff. Otherwise, everything sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher after a while, because he just kind of starts, you know, it's just, you hear the same words over and over again said the same way, and it just kind of just doesn't make any sense anymore. But with the book, though, I just kind of just sat down and, you know, took a break from it for a couple of weeks and just sat down and just kind of read through it. And I was like, okay, it makes sense. There's, you know, punctuation, you know. So it's probably good for anybody above the fifth grade reading level, I'm assuming. So,
see, I cannot even do that, dude. The way it cut, because I don't plan anything. You know, I just literally sit down and throw on. Honestly, I throw on a song and I'm like, all right, now I'm going to write about whatever I'm thinking about with this song that sort of ties to this fucking chapter that I'm writing.
Yeah,
whatever.
Right.
And I just scribble, and sometimes it's, you know, 50 pages, and sometimes it's 2 pages or whatever, but I can never edit it. If I go back and try and read it, I read the mistakes as what I thought it was supposed to be in my head.
Gotcha. Constantly.
I can't edit it. That's why I've put out the 6 books. I've had 6 different people do it for me, because I can't. The shit that's definitely wrong, like John would send me like 430 changes, and I would read them and I'd be like, these are all fucking right. What's wrong with him? And meanwhile, they're not wrong. They were definitely wrong, but I would read it the same way that it came out of my face. You know?
Right. What I would try to do is just, like, say we got a paragraph going, I just kind of read as I write. It's kind of like, you know, as if I was reading like somebody else's book. I'd be like, oh, it'd be interesting if it goes in this direction. Just kind of take it there. And I just kind of just keep on going, just let the mistakes happen and kind of go back and just tighten everything up. And be like, doesn't that need to be? And that's why the book's only like 212 pages, and it's like 45,000 words or something like that, and that's legally above being a novel. So it worked out well that way. But I just love to just tighten shit up as much as humanly possible, and just kind of, you know, because I mean, you read like a Stephen King book or something like that, he's talking about how a door creaked, and he's describing the sound for like 4 chapters, and it's just, you know, it's to the point where it doesn't even make sense anymore. But so this one, it just kind of just the whole vibe of it. You just start reading it. It starts off like an autobiography. You know, it actually reads like an autobiography. So it's just kind of, you know, it fits in perfectly for the market, because a lot of music fans love reading autobiographies. So this is a fiction one. Right. And there's lots of fucked up shit happens in it too. So I think people will, that'll find its audience. It's kind of like it's like Evil Dead 2 meets The Dirt.
No, dude, I got to hand it to Ellefson, man. I mean, I've said this before, and that dude is fucking unbelievable. That guy is a absolute workaholic.
He is.
The fact that he's got his own book publishing company, he's got his film division that, you know, you're involved with, of course, and he's got everything else going on, the record label. Megadeth. He's got like 6 or 7 different side projects. I don't know how that fucker has the time to do this shit. I keep telling him. He's got his own coffee business. I mean, that guy is an absolute workaholic. He did the narration to the Inside Metal movie, Rise of LA Thrash Metal. Did an awesome job. And John Bush did the one to the previous title. Yeah, so it was cool to get, you know, the artists involved. But man, Dave is just, it's just unbelievable. I really tip my hat to that, tip my beanie to that guy, because that guy just absolutely, you know, he just covers every, you know, and he does everything well too. And, you know, he treats everyone well. And the guy's unbelievable. I mean, it's amazing how he has the time to do all that stuff and still be in one of the biggest heavy metal bands in the world.
Yeah, it's crazy. He loves to work, and he loves collaboration.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, he loves working with. If you got an idea, like, he'd be like, yeah, let's go for it. It's like with the Dwellers. I was like, I remember it came to him because I had this idea for like a found footage horror movie. It was originally supposed to be a remake of this 80s horror movie called Chud. And I don't know if anybody remembers that one, but it's a cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers. You know, with Chud. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much about sewer monsters. and homeless people turn into monsters because of government radiation in the sewers in New York. And it was Daniel Stern's in it, and it's a cool movie. And me and the guy that wrote Chud, we're going to do like a found footage remake and all that. And it turns out he only owned the musical rights to Chud, which made no fucking sense. But it was weird. And so I kind of had the idea and the treatment and kind of put it off to the side. And then a couple years later, you know, I was thinking about Ellison. I was like, oh, he's got the coffee thing. He's got the record label. You know, he's got he's got his own line of doilies. And I was like, what else could he do? What else would be cool to, because he and I had known each other for a couple years at that point. And we work really well together. And I was like, what about Ellison Films? And so I told him about it. I was like, what do you think that, you know, no budget horror movie, found footage, all told from the documentary camera perspective and all that and everything. And he's like, sure, let's do it. Ellison Films, let's do it. And I was like, holy shit. All right. And then so here we are. And then I was actually just working on it right before we hopped on doing this. And there's kind of this final tweaks and all that. But we're going to show it February 20th in North Carolina at the Mad Monster Party. And so supposedly there's going to be like they told me about this particular premiere, but I was like, I don't fucking believe it. They said the Man's Chinese Theater in like March or something like that. And I was like, yeah, that's preposterous. This movie doesn't deserve to play there. But I was like, okay, I'll take it. But I think people get a kick out of it. Ellison's in it. He plays himself. And yes, he is. So is Neely. And they do a great part. It really, it's like much like how The Rug tied the room together in Big Lebowski. Their part kind of ties the whole movie together in this.
Yeah, Neely plays that gay hooker in it.
He does a great job. You just see what he does with that Grey Goose bottle too. But no hands. I love you, Neely. I love you.
He's one of those method actors.
All I know is he was standing on a street corner in hiking boots, going, "Don!
Apropos."
Yeah.
Could I say something? I don't know if you're going to jump into a break or whatever, but I thought Krista, or My Name is Krista, was the sickest movie ever. And I'm thinking, this could never get a mainstream push. Mm-hmm. And then I saw on, what was it, Netflix or Amazon Prime, a movie that quite possibly was even more disgusting or sicker on a major, and this was a major motion picture.
What is it?
Have you seen this movie? And it kept coming in my queue or whatever on it was Amazon Prime, I believe, called Let Sleeping Dogs Lie.
That sounds familiar.
I've seen the name, but I never watched it.
Okay. I saw it. I looked into it. It's about this. It was the total romantic comedy. It starts out kind of like your movie, but your movie, you could tell it's dark. It's this dark. Yeah. This is like a happy-go-lucky, you know, a kind of a corny, goofy guy that's marrying this hot chick. And they're main actors. I've seen them. I don't recall who they were before. But they're going through this, and then they're going to get married. They're engaged to get married, and he wants to let no secrets. Just tell me, you know, your secrets. And she has this one secret. She's not telling them. So he starts talking about stuff that he's done. And so she like made something up like, oh yeah, one day. And, you know, when I was in college, me and my girlfriend, we got real drunk together and we started messing around with each other. And of course the guy gets all turned on by that and this and that. And then, you know, and then it keeps going on. And then they meet with the guy's parents or her parents, who are like super, you know, kind of conservative, real conservative. And it's, you know, he's trying to, you know, talk the father into, oh, I want to marry your daughter, blah, blah, blah. Total romantic comedy and all this stuff. Then they're in this garage she has a fucked up brother who's like kind of mental and hates his sister. like really jealous of the sister, gets all the attention. Anyway, they go in the garage to sneak away because they have to, you know, sleep in separate rooms. So they're in the garage and he's going, come on, tell me about some of your, you know, see something, you know, you haven't told me. And then he tells a story about him and his buddies when they were in college or whatever. They all got drunk and had a circle jerk and jerked off on a cookie. And the last one to jerk off had to eat the cookie. You know? So she finally goes, okay, well, I'll tell you when I got real drunk once and I was with my, I saw my dog there and my dog was just laying there and I was real drunk and horny and I sucked my dog's cock. And then he's like totally in love with this chick. And then he gets like super disgusted. Like, you did what? you know, and then she's like, oh, and then she's like, oh, I was joking. I was just joking. And he goes, no, I don't think you were joking. Then he's comfortable. I was it was a stupid thing I did. I was drunk. I sucked his dick. I'd just rather not talk about it. And then he just won't let it go. And anyway, the brother overhears it because the brother was in the garage doing crack and overhears it and tells the parents that, oh, yeah, your lovely daughter sucked a dog's cock. You know? And then the parents freak out and kind of disown her. And get, and they won't return her call or anything, and they leave, and then the guy ends up being super disgusted and breaks up with her, and then I mean it just goes on, and then the mother dies, and the brother's in jail, and they told the brother in jail that the mother died, and then the brother's telling her it's because you sucked the dog's cock, that's why she died. I mean, I'm like going, what the fuck, you know? And then I guess her, the husband kind of, or the you know, fiance try to make things work and try to get back together. And this was the weirdest fucking thing. They're like on the couch, like making out. And then they show, you know, they're making out. And then they go to a picture of the chick making out with the dog. And the dog's tongue, and they're tonguing each other like two. I go, this is a bestiality to the max. And they're making out with the dog. And then he's like, he's getting turned on by the kissing. And he's not getting hard. She's, oh, you're not going, oh, let's just keep kissing. Let's just keep kissing. And then he finally goes, hey, I want you to do something. He had a dog. The dog's name was Steve. He goes, hey, could you suck Steve's dick? And she's like, what? And she gets all freaked out. Like, what? You know, I told you this story. I'm trying to forget about this. And you want, oh, come on. You did it once before. Do it again, you know? And he's getting like really, you know, weird about it. And she's like, no, I'm not going to suck the dog's dick in front of you. Come on, it really turned me on. Just suck his dick. And she's like, no. And then he's like, you fucking cunt. And I'm like, whoa. I mean, it was like, it was Bobcat Goldthwait wrote it. But I'm watching this, and this is like it starts out like a total romantic rated G fucking thing. It just turns even more so than your movie. But it's, I mean, it's a major movie, major budget. And I'm like going, how could they get away with this shit? But it's a weird fucking movie. But once you watch it, you're like, what the fuck? Could it get any worse? And it's, you know, when sleeping dogs lie.
It sounds like Chasing Amy, like on steroids.
Yeah.
Or Chasing Amy on crack.
Yeah, I was blown away watching it, going, holy shit.
Man, I definitely got to see that now. Absolutely. Let Sleeping Dogs Lie. That sounds deliciously fucked up.
I think it was done around 2007. And, I was always noticing, you notice anything before, say, 2010 or 2012, that was when Hollywood were really taking risks and doing different stuff. And then after that, between 2010, 2012, when all that PC shit started coming, the Me Too movement and all that shit coming in, everything changed. And Hollywood wanted nothing to do with it. They kind of disowned all the stuff. I mean, even the series and shit. You look at, the Sons of Anarchy. Like Entourage or Californication, it was all about fucking chicks and treating chicks like shit and just, you know, being this macho. And then that just kind of ended all of a sudden. All early 2000s.
Okay. It's like Steph and I were watching Hot Tub Time Machine the other day, and you know when he loses the bet with the Browns and the football game because of the squirrel, and he has to blow his buddy, and he's like he's down in front of him, he's like, oh, it's so incredibly black, like, and it's such an innocuous thing, but we looked at each other like, you can't get away with this anymore. And then like something like Anchorman 2, like, you know, he's got like the black love interest, and he's at, you know, at dinner with them, and he's like, which one of you pipe hitting bitches wants to pass me the potatoes? And like all this different stuff. And I watched it recently and I went, how in the fuck did they get away with this? Like, I mean, this is like, and it was 2008, I think it was, or something.
That was the last time Hollywood had balls, man.
Then you can't do any of that anymore.
Pipe hitting bitches.
the racist stuff in there, the stuff that he does at the dinner table, like, you know what I'm talking about, big black mother of Linda, like, and they're all sitting there at the table like, oh my god, it was hysterical, man. But yeah, there's no way you get away with that shit.
Funnier is how Hollywood now tries to make it look like they're so righteous, and it's like, fuck you guys, you're the same people that put out the same thing, and now you're trying to hop on this movement. How are you fucking hypocritical bastards?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, yeah. every single one of them took millions from fucking Harvey Weinstein. You know, so shut up with your fucking Me Too. Yeah. Fuck off.
And now they're all bitching. I love that segment you did about Warner Brothers tying in with HBO Max. And now all the fucking actors are bitching. We're not going to make enough money now.
Well, well, I'll tell you what. And here's the deal. And Drew, speak on this. Or you as well, Bob, because you guys both have movies. And yeah, John, you're being left out. But
how do you know I don't have a movie?
Yeah, well, there you go. That's true.
Got a good porn movie. Him and Steph, right? Yeah.
Well, the Steph part would be good.
Who doesn't like watching a fat guy fuck? Come on now.
Well, here's my thought with the movie thing. I honestly think that it accomplishes two things. One, it finally ends the uselessness of the movie theater, which the movie theater is going to become like the drive-in theater is now. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be one every 100, 150 miles, and it'll be for, or IMAX might stick around, you know, the big 3-tier IMAX might for the specialty showing. But it really, it's an unnecessary business. You know, everybody has a 50-inch TV or bigger. Everybody does pretty much anymore. At least a 42. I mean, just about everybody has at least a 42-inch screen or bigger now. So there's no need, you know, and people have sound bars and all this other shit, you know, for you don't need to go to the theater. You don't need to hear the movie in between babies crying and texts going off and, you know, all that shit. So there's that. And then the other thing, which I think is going to be a really big boon with the Hollywood movies coming in, is you are going to see the biggest boon ever of the B and C type movies, the low budget movies, getting a lot of love, because people are going to adjust their movie watching to watching everything at home. And just like on Netflix, now instead of flicking through Netflix for a week before you find a movie, now you're going to pick Wonder Woman 84 or whatever the movie is. And then when that ends, it's going to show you, HBO is going to show you automatically, well, here's three titles that you might like because you like that movie. And then they're going to have to fill those spots, and they're going to fill it with a lot of second tier movie stuff that they don't have to pay a bunch of money to have. You know, HBO could buy a movie like Krista, as an example. They could show, I don't know,
Let's Whatever. See the Dog Fly.
Yeah. But I mean, just if there's a big budget one, whatever a big budget one would be, Saw 20 or whatever. Would be. If Saw 20 came out at the end of it, when it shows you might also like, I could see Her Name is Krista being underneath it. And I could see HBO buying Her Name is Krista, because they could probably get exclusive rights to it for, you know, X thousand instead of X point X million. You know, so they'll push it, and you're going to see these guys that have, you're going to see like a boon of like a Clerks type of a Kevin Smith rise. And with a bunch of guys that have toiled in the low budget movie, you're going to see them get a lot more love, because there's going to be a lot more need for those kind of movies.
No, absolutely. I agree. It's like a movie theater now. It's just one last place you have to go to. You know, you don't got to stand in line to, you know, watch a movie now. Like, everybody's just getting so accustomed, especially with the pandemic and all that, just by sitting at home and just flipping through their Netflix or whatever. And me personally, I never adjusted to Netflix. I still like physical media, you know? Like, I just, like, when all that stuff started taking off, I was like, this is kind of weird. Like, what if there's like a big power outage? What are you going to do? You know, I never, the technology always kind of freaked me out. I listened to too much Fear Factory, I guess. But they're right about everything. But I agree 100%, man. I think the whole market's definitely going to change big time, because even when it comes down to shooting a movie, especially with the big budget, it's either going to go one way or the other. It's going to get more expensive, because you got to put, everybody, you know, for masks and everything and social distancing and all that. And they're probably going to pass on certain movies because, you know, well, it's going to cost X amount of money to film that crowd scene because you need to take so many precautions because of the COVID stuff. And, you know, and we all know, even if there's a vaccine and even if it works or whatever, everybody's still going to be paranoid, you know, for a long time. Even if it's like it's all gone and away and everything, people are going to still be wearing masks years from now. I predict, you know, like that's my two cents on that for sure. I mean, And but yeah, with movies though, everything's going to change, man. Much like the music business changed, like Bob was saying, in the early 2000s. I think now is the time for the, you know, the film business to completely change,
Right. I wouldn't say 100% though. I would say maybe 50%. I'll tell you why. I think the movie theater, let's say everything gets back to complete normalcy, you know, where the theaters are all open, full capacity, blah, blah, blah. You know, obviously there'll be certain theaters that are closed down. The bigger theaters, the IMAXs, the ones in the big shopping centers, the trendy kind of things. That's for some of the people to do. And I know a lot of people, I know Chris is a total homebody, just like Neely. He's just happy enough sitting in his room doing stuff. But a lot of people, they want to get out. And most young people today, they go out to dinner. They want to see a movie. It's just kind of a social thing. So it's not going to completely die. People are going to still want to go out and have that. And especially these big blockbusters, the Star Wars. You know, now we get my buddy here involved in the conversation. You get all the Star Wars nerds. They all like to gather around and talk during the intermission. Oh, man, what's with that bitch in Obi-Wan Kenobi? Kicks ass. Whatever the fuck you nerds talk about, but all those things, the Marvel comics and all that kind of stuff, you're always going to get those people who are going to want that social, you know, kind of thing. And guys just going on a date. I mean, a movie is just always a safe date. Hey, let's go out to dinner and go see a movie. Or you're at the mall, at one of these malls. Oh, this is playing. Let's go see that. It's not necessarily something we want to see. And where the theaters make their money is off the popcorn, the soda pop, the candy, all that shit. You figure the movies cost what nowadays? 12 to 15 bucks. Yeah. I don't know, maybe more. But people end up paying probably like 30 bucks per person, you know, just because they're going to buy popcorn, they're going to buy a soda, they're going to buy this. And the theaters, they get a chunk of that. And so that's what a lot of the Hollywood people are bitching about. Not just the movies, is when you go to a theater, you got to add in all that extra expense. You know, everyone thinks, oh, the retailers, they're ripping you off. The movie theaters are making a mint. It's like, no, all the movie companies are getting a big chunk of all the food that they're selling. So it won't die out completely, but it is going to make a change. And hopefully, I think you'll see blockbuster, like old style movies, you know, like how Rocky Horror Picture will always come on the theaters, you know, be a big event. And I think movies like, you know, cult movies like Animal House and, you know, maybe Slapshot and some of those kind of older 70s movies might make a theater comeback because they're just fun. People in the theater, you know, and just really get into it. And that kind
I agree 100% on that. Yeah. It's probably like 50-50, like probably like what they just did with that Wonder Woman movie. That didn't go to theaters at all. They just like, fuck that.
It's in theaters as well. You can do it.
Oh, is it? Okay. So they did it.
But what's only 25% at theaters? Isn't that like all over 25% capacity or?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
I mean, I passed the Cinemark. It's right off. It's like immediately to the left of the highway on my way home from Lima. And I was kind of surprised because I looked over in the parking lot, it was like half full. And I haven't seen that in God knows how long. I mean, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, obviously, but, you know, it's out by Mansfield area, which, you know, Aiken's familiar with that being from here. But, you know, it was way more people than I would have thought. So, I mean, people are still, I mean, there is still that interest. I just, you know, you're speaking to blockbusters, and I wonder how they're going to justify these budgets. I mean, like, you know, kind of like with the music industry, the technology is going to have to catch up. Like, you know, Aiken got nerdy for a second, so I can get nerdy. But that Mandalorian show they're doing for Star Wars, like they created this new technology. It's called the Vision. And basically the background is this enormous, like 100-foot wide, like video screen. It's like 30 feet tall. And anything you see in the show in the background is actually on a gigantic, like almost like an enormous flat screen television. And it's making like live action shows, like the production of them, way more cost effective. So it's, I mean, if they're going to do it in this fashion and not have like packed box offices and, you know, movies making $1 billion and stuff like that, and like they're going to have, the technology is going to have to change, because I don't know, almost like music. I mean, it's like, how's it going to survive? You know, you can't put $250 million into a movie, because how are you going to make that revenue back? There's no chance in hell.
I disagree. And I'll tell you why I disagree. Because if you just do the math, HBO Max has 30 million subscribers. Each of them's paying $15 a hit. That's math, you know, so I don't know. But, you know, that's more than $100 million. Okay, so it's $450 million a month. Now, what I'm sure they're going to do is license for X amount of time for I'm sure it's not just going to be, well, here's $100 million, go make your movie and we'll put it on HBO. I'm sure it's going to be, we're going to release the movie to HBO for this amount of time or for this amount of plays, which HBO will have in the background. We'll say 5 million plays or whatever. And for 5 million plays, you're going to pay us $100 million. And then and then they'll bring it in that way. And then once they reach that thing, it just like, and it'll be just like all these places do now where it'll just be, you know, it'll kick it out and say, okay, this one's leaving our platform and it's going to the next platform. So then Hulu will buy it at a reduced rate for their syndication time for $35 million for a 3-month run or whatever. And it'll bounce around until eventually it's on Pluto and Crackle for, you know, $1 million a hit. But if you do the math out between that and the physical sales and everything else, it'll still end up being about the same amount of money.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
It's a workable scenario. It's just a different scenario. And that's, you know, all these fucking cucks that are crying about it in Hollywood, that's really what they're not seeing, is that the business model itself is going to change. It's not going to be like, well, we're just releasing it for free to HBO.
Yeah.
I can promise you HBO probably put out $1 billion for the 12 movies that they're getting this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because and some of them are big, you know, some one of them's like The Matrix 4. And you know, I would watch that. I don't watch many movies, but I would watch Matrix 4. I have HBO, and in my world, HBO is literally the new Spotify. It's here. I'll just pay my $15 a month, and you're going to give me all the movies. Now I don't have to go see them. Good. And, you know, Tim, I think that's how the model is going to work. And just like Spotify, they're not losing any money. The artists get fucked. But but Spotify ain't losing anyway. They're billions.
I wonder where it's going to go though, because, you know, one of the recent examples of this. I mean, the first time I did the on demand thing was Bill and Ted 3, mm-hmm. and it was $30. I mean, you own it afterwards.
Yeah, I did it too.
And it's like, but I saw so many people bitching and going, "Well, I'm not paying $30 for that," and I'm thinking, okay, but two movie tickets alone are going to be almost $30. And then you're paying $12 for popcorn and $8 for pop. And it's like, so $30 when you can just have if you have like 8 people over, you're spending like $4 a person and you go get like garbage junk food at the goddamn gas station up the street. I mean, you're saving a ton of money doing that $30. And yet so many people didn't look at it that way. It was unbelievable to me.
But that's because it's the first one. When it becomes the standard, dude, When Hulu first came out, which was before Netflix was doing anything but mailing DVDs back and forth, people thought Hulu was stupid. They were like, who's going to watch things the day after it airs? Nobody's going to do that. They're going to miss it on the night that it's there. They're not going to sit around and wait till the next day to watch SVU. They want to watch it in real time. Meanwhile, which one of us watches real time TV anymore?
Or for sporting events, maybe.
That's the only thing for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing anybody watches anymore. But back at that time, people thought that was insanity, that you wouldn't be able to go to work the next day and talk to your friends about, did you see what happened on Chicago Med? You know, it was like nobody even understood that as a theory. And then it happened, and now nobody even understands. I can't even fathom knowing what day, you know, people like my mom, you know, who's old, you know, my mom will hit me up and she'll ask me, like, she watches some of the same shows I do because she's sick like me. And she'll say, well, what day is it on? And I have no answer to that for anything. Does anybody know what day anything is on anymore? Other than a sporting event?
No.
I mean, do you know that this is on Tuesday at 10 o'clock or this is on Wednesday at 8? No one knows that anymore.
Nope.
Because we're all now trained into fucking on demand.
You know, don't have TGIF anymore?
No, yeah, exactly. Or what was the Must See Thursdays or whatever?
Must See Thursday, yeah.
Wasn't that it with Friends and what was the other one? They had like all the knockoffs of Friends too. God,
oh, right. Was it like yeah. Mad About You or something? Or
yeah, you, Mad About You. You know, all those shitty shows. Must See Thursday. Now there's no Must See anything. Now it's like no. I must see when there's nudity and swearing. I can't be bothered with network television.
Or dogs being blown, apparently.
I say I'm getting sick already of everything on Netflix and even Amazon. At least Amazon Prime has a much better selection. Obviously, some of the stuff you have to still pay for, even as a member. But some of it's worth it if you know. But Netflix has just gone complete shit. I mean, I always think about canceling it, but it's still, for me, I think it's only $8.99 I'm getting charged.
Yeah, I mean, so, it's cheap.
Yeah, it's, you know, and there'll be something that comes across and whatever. But, yeah, for that price and the others, I don't know why anyone would get cable TV or deal with advertisements or any of that.
Well, and you know, the weird thing is at least my own personal watching, I'm actually going to the free stuff that actually has the commercials. Not because I want to see the commercials, but because I just like a lot of the programming that they have, a lot of it, and a lot of it's old. I know we tell stories all the time on the show about watching, you know, endless seasons of The Love Boat or Fantasy Island or whatever. But you know what? That's actually decent entertainment for free. You know, it's like, okay, I can watch another movie from Netflix that feels like every other movie from Netflix, or I can watch something old, or I can watch something really old that I didn't grasp when I was 8, you know, but is kind of known. And, you know, Pluto TV is going to be, when all is said and done, when 20 years from now, put this in the CMS books and write it down. 20 years from now, Pluto TV will be the biggest fucking entertainment thing that there is. I will guarantee that the combination of, there's 10,000 titles that are on demand, plus there's 280 live channels for nothing. For 100, I mean, you have to deal with commercials, but so what?
The commercials aren't that bad. It's not as bad as regular TV.
It's not.
But like you said, they keep adding more. Like they had the Love Boat channel and the Spanish Yacht channel. They got Three's Company. They got Cops 24/7. They got, you know, so you can just flip around them. When there's an ad, you just flip around the channels, and they got good movies, you know, usually on the features. But,
it's not worth a damn until it has All in the Family. Why that should have? Is it really?
Yeah, All in the Family. They run All in the Family as part of the One Day at a Time channel. Isn't that it, Bob?
I think it's that, and All in the Family, maybe the Jeffersons or Good Times. All in the Family is on all the time.
Yeah, that's the best sitcom ever.
They should get a Get Smart channel. Although I've got the
Get Smart.
Do they on there? Get
Smart channel, yeah.
Oh, did they? They must have just added that then.
Yeah, it's on there. It's like in the zeros. It's like 009 or something.
Oh, really? Okay,
but the thing about Pluto, for people that don't know, is it's different from regular cable because it's really designed on the binge watching model. Instead of having channels that have a bunch of different shows on them, the channels have like one show or like one show in the spinoffs. Like the Happy Days channel has Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Mork and Mindy, the main show and two spinoffs from that show. And the One Day at a Time. Huh?
There's a Happy Days channel too?
Yeah, that's new too. That just came out.
Wow. Fuck. I haven't been on in a while.
I love Pluto. I'm all about Pluto. But it's got everything. It's got live news if you want news. It's got modern shows like Leverage and Numbers and, you know, shit like that. If you're into that, it's got
documentary channel, music channel,
comedy channels, you know, and none
Dave
of
Chappelle censored. Channel too. You can just binge on Dave Chappelle,
and none of it censored.
Yeah,
all you got to do is just deal with the commercials. So it's really fun. I love Pluto, and I'm telling you, it's going to take over the world because it's addictive as hell, and it's free. Yeah. For free, you get 286 channels. For fucking $79 a month, you get 80 channels. And most
the funny thing, I was about to cut you up, but they have on demand on it and the live. And I'm always see myself watching the live.
I do too.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I could probably watch it on demand and if you know, catch up, like watch it from the beginning. But mm-hmm. you just kind of turn on, you just kick back and you watch and you know, it's live and you binge.
It's binge oriented, but it has the option to be old school. Yeah. And us old folks, we fucking go old school and just turn on the live. I watch Pluto TV pretty much 8 hours a day when I'm sitting at home working. I just throw them.
Bring some up to you guys. You might be a little bit too young. You might remember this, Chris. I'm sure Neely would remember the show. But I mean, after hearing you guys talk about the Love Boat and Fantasy Island, the 70s shows and how politically incorrect they were and all about fucking. And, you know, you watch it now and you're realizing, holy shit, because that was kind of the same thing. And I never got into it. I always, even back in the 70s when I was a kid, I thought it was ridiculous. I thought it was just cornball as hell. And now you watch it now and you're like going, holy fuck, this is bad. It's like watching Welcome Back, Kotter now. Back when that started, I thought that was the coolest thing. Yeah, the Sweat Hogs. I watch it now. It's just cringeworthy. But there was a show, and talking about just, you know, chicks, you know, just about fucking, totally politically incorrect. It was called Flying High. You remember that? The Three Stooges?
I don't remember that.
Go on YouTube and maybe find it. Just go on YouTube and check out the introduction or to the thing, and you'll see the three super fucking hot stewardesses. And all they do, they all live together. And there's this horny captain who's always trying to fuck them. And that's the whole show. That's the whole premise of the show.
That's awesome.
I remember this one episode where they were all playing racquetball with the captain. And one of the chicks hit the captain in the head with a racket, and he went blind for like temporarily blind. And so he's blind that she felt so bad for him. So she takes care of them. They bring him to her house. And so these chicks are like in the shower, take a shower, and he's obviously looking, and they would catch him. And he's like, oh, I didn't see anything. I'm blind. You know, his vision came back like after a couple hours. But of course, he's faking it so he could stay there for like a few days. And finally, they catch him that, you know, hey, how did you know that? How did you know what color I was wearing? And he's like, but, you know, it was just all, I mean, it's just this perverted kind of shit. There was this other episode where they meet this, an old friend of the captain's. It's like a Hugh Hefner kind of guy.
Right.
He's got this Playboy mansion and has this magazine, and he's going to marry this chick, and this chick actually happened to be the old girlfriend of the captain, and then the captain and them fight over this chick. And dude, it's just stupid, but it was like, total 70s, anything goes, you know, it was cool. But the chicks were just hot as fuck. You guys see, just go on YouTube, you can see the introduction, Flying High.
I gotta see this
70s sitcom, Flying High.
Dude, I gotta that and Let Sleeping Dogs Lie. I gotta write this down.
Yeah, you're schooling us tonight, Bob, on stuff we have to watch.
Neely would love that show.
Aiken, so I just emailed you a screenshot from a clip of the show, and I looked at their picture. I think there's two hot chicks and one not hot chick, and in this clip, you could tell which one the not hot chick is because she looks like she's fresh out of Auschwitz.
Which blonde one?
Oh God, get that woman a sandwich. Holy shit. Oh,
my goodness. Yeah.
No, she's actually pretty hot. The brunettes are the hottest ones, the two brunettes. But the blonde.
Well, that's what's. Really, but the one. But look at this picture, Bob. When he pulls it up, look at this picture. The one brunette, she is like scrawny as hell.
No, I don't see anything.
And I think the one brunette, like, is. I think the one brunette was in something else. She looks kind of familiar, really familiar.
Flying High.
Hold on, retard here.
One of them kind of looks like Neely's girl Susanna Hoffs from the Bengals a little.
Yeah.
Like
where
did that go? Right, let's Pam something, I think her name was. Well, if you look at the intro, they show the intro. You can watch the intro. You can see them all there, all in bikinis and shit, and they all look pretty fucking hot.
If I could figure this goddamn shit out. I do this every week, and now tonight.
I know you hate YouTube, but you can go on YouTube, Flying High 70s sitcom.
Now tonight, I can't.
All right, let's see. I'm
hold on.
This look at you amazing. Fucking perverts, Matt. It's like you guys are, you know, getting on Pornhub for the first time.
Hey, it won't be Pornhub anymore.
That's who it is.
For those that aren't watching on video, these guys are stroking their dick while they're on the computer.
I knew it. You don't want to come on. The hot brunette was in The Greatest American Hero. And I know that because for some damn reason, my wife loves that show. I knew she looked familiar.
Believe it or not.
That's a bad still shot, actually.
You think? That's a really bad still shot,
yeah.
Wait, look at her in the foreground. I mean, that's, whoa, god damn. That's like a 2x4.
Yeah. No, that's not a good still shot. If you watch them live, it's much better.
Does it make her have tits?
Well, that's one thing. That one doesn't have.
Sorry, I'm a boob guy. I'm a boob guy. I see somebody flat, and I'm like, nah, click, change it.
Dispose of this one.
Anyway, if you're into like a show about three slutty stewardesses, then check it out.
No, that would be fine. Yes.
Episodes online, but that would be a good channel to have. I just remember that as a kid. It was short lived. They probably only had one or two seasons at the most.
I wonder how many they did.
It was like one of those things. You remember Blansky's Beauties?
What was it called?
Blansky's Beauties. It was a Gary Marshall spin. It was a Happy Days spinoff. It was Scott Baio and that chick who was Richie Cunningham's girlfriend. Lori Beth is in it. It was and Carmine from Laverne and Shirley is in it. It was horrible, but it's about this chick that has a beauty pageant in Vegas. But it's all sexual. It's all the chicks are. They're kind of like half beauty pageant, half strip show kind of show. They're showgirls. And it was real short lived. It was horrible. I tried watching an episode recently. I was like, God, I can't believe I watched this back then. But I mean, it's so horrible that was great. You know, it's one of those. But it was a Gary Marshall thing. It was supposed to be like a big spinoff. Lance's Beauty.
Let's watch this flying high.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Throw this on.
The blind chick is in the Love Boat and Fantasy Island.
Of course.
I just looked up IMDb. Yeah. She's in both of those shows.
Of course, because those are tremendously great shows.
Here we go.
Of course, it's got the awesome 70s show music.
Boy, this is really dated.
It was mid to late 70s, I think.
Yeah, the chicks are pretty hot, though, I will say. Not bad.
That long-haired brunette one, man.
And they all have like great personalities. They're all fun, bubbly kind of chicks.
Oh, like that matters, Bob.
Well, I mean, they're not like these bitchy kind of, you know, ones that you would see today, like, or the ones in like the Knott's Landings or those kind of things. They're just, you know, fun-go-lucky party chicks.
I'll just watch it with the sound down so we can talk over it, because who needs to hear that music?
Wow. Darren Haig put an awesome still shot of them in the chat room.
Look how cute she is there. Look at that.
Catherine Witt.
So, yeah, maybe no tits.
But right, she's hot too. Colleen Seneca. Connie Seneca.
I'll take that one.
That's the pervert. He's a perverted Catherine.
Look at that guy, the drunken air.
Yeah, just make a left at Albuquerque, I guess.
The planes are too low in New York City. The planes are too. Where did it go?
Doesn't pour in the booze into his coffee in the middle of the show.
I gotta ask you, Chris, since you know the whole thing on Fantasy Island.
Yeah,
I never saw this. I was talking to my cousin who came over yesterday for Christmas, and we were talking about Fantasy Island. He goes, "Dude, did you see the documentary they did on the plane guy? What's his name?
Oh, Tattoo.
Tattoo."
Hervé something.
There's a documentary about him. Huh. And the one other, I know you're not supposed to say midget. The other midget, Peter whatever, I guess plays him.
Yeah,
exactly. Plays him. And I guess the guy in person was a complete and total pervert.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a documentary. Mike goes, dude, you got to see the documentary. Anyway, did you see that?
I have not seen it, but I would watch that. Just knowing that he blew his little head off means that I would watch this documentary.
Wait, Tattoo shot himself? I didn't know that.
Killed himself.
Yeah, I know he died.
Yeah, he killed himself.
I did not know
tiny
that.
Gun?
But yeah, I guess the guy was like a total squirt gun.
BB gun?
Shot him up with a squirt gun.
Cops are like, how the fuck is this even possible? Like,
get it. Get it, squirt gun, because he's little.
Squirt gun. Oh, good. I like that.
Play on words. Well played.
All right, should we play music? We've actually been rambling for an hour and a half and have not talked about anything. So.
It's a good episode. Can I dedicate a song to Neely? Would that be okay?
Yeah, but I'm not going to play it, but you can dedicate
it. Well, then, case, the theme song for Flying Eye.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to keep Neely a part of this.
No, he's not here. He's out. He's out. This is no hair metal, no docking, no nothing tonight. This is.
Well, it wouldn't have been that. So.
It's all Chris stuff. Well, this whole segment is all Bob Nalbandian stuff, because this is all Bay Area thrash bands from many of which were featured. In fact, I think all three of these bands that we're about to play were featured in Inside Metal, that being Heathen, Death Angel, and Nuclear Assault. So
Nuclear Assault were East Coast, but that's okay.
Are they Nuclear Assault?
You fucked up, Aiken.
No, I saw them at the Omni.
Well, they probably played there. Matt Leifler from Anthrax.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I thought they were from the Bay Area.
Chris, weren't you in that documentary?
Yeah, I mean, so what? I didn't write it. Well, fuck it. Fuck it. Now I feel like a dick, but whatever. That's fine. All right, we'll play the East Coast Band.
There you go. Get it right, fucker.
All right. Let's do this. Let's play some Nuclear Assault from Something Wicked. This is Behind Glass Walls, exclusively here. Anybody?
On your classic metal show. I figured Bob would jump in with me. Nice.
All right. That was a lot of fun, wasn't it? And you know what else is a lot of fun? The CMS Podcast Network. That's right. CMSPN.com is the address. Make sure you go over there. Make sure you watch the episodes there, you listen to the episodes there, and maybe you even just subscribe so it's delivered to your phone, to whatever podcasting software you use, but do it from cmspn.com. Once again, cmspn.com, cmspn.com, cmspn.com. We'll see you next time, fucks.